America and to the rest of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to an exciting and frankly historic episode of Let's Weekend. I am Corstum, your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Filippo DiNapo and Patrick Mifflin. Chris Elogi will be joining us a little bit later, hopefully. This episode is for, it is April 27th, last show of the month, and 2018, and some shit happened today.
Yeah, and we're gonna good.
Some of it actually good. Some of it that's actually going to restore your faith in humanity for once.
Well, let's not get carried away here.
Yeah. Frankly, I did not expect it to happen in my lifetime, but or at least not happen the way it's going down right now. Because I expected it to go out with a lot more flames and fury, but no, that's not how it's happening. But we'll tell you all about we'll tell you all about that in just a little while, because we got some other shit to deal with. Also, we'll be talking about some other historic news and finding we now know who the Golden State Killer was. It's been 40-plus years, but we finally found out who he was. And you will be surprised, or not, finding out who he was. Apparently, Amazon is now in the midst of a secret project that is probably going to take over the world. Apparently, Amazon really is intent on becoming the real-life example for OCP, but... Also, Charlie Rose is back. He's going to wants to write another, do another interview show. Unfortunately, it's probably going to be with other Me Too men. Yeah. That's not good. That's not good. Also, our childhood is kind of coming back. From Nickelodeon, they're actually starting a revival of something that we loved in our childhood and watched, I at least watched religiously back in the day. Also some new projects from HBO and Netflix. We'll be getting to all of that later. And of course Chris will be joining us later too. So, start us all off. Phil, what have you been up to this week?
So I've been watching movies, quite a few of them actually, which is kind of new for me. Usually I don't watch many movies, but I've kind of gotten back into the habit of it, and it's kind of fun. I watched Zootopia, which I hadn't before, and it's amazing.
Yeah, it is. It is a genuinely good movie.
Yeah.
And the thing is, when that movie came out, people didn't expect it was going to go in the direction that they thought it would.
Yeah, it starts off as a kind of cute, cuddly, fluffy type kids movie, and then turns into an amazingly deep social commentary of our society. So,
although the metaphor is kind of twisted and convoluted.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, the way that they do it is the way the metaphor works is that it's relevant to it's a commentary on like. Racial profiling, and you know the way that police and society sort of use it to, you know, keep power and everything, and to manipulate it, and it's relevant. But the thing is have you seen the movie, Pat?
No.
Okay, I won't spoil it for you, but it works pertaining to their society. But if you try to draw like a direct equivalence between their world and ours, it kind of doesn't work.
Gets lost in the translation.
Yeah, it still makes a good point, but you got to remember that they're using a metaphor that is relevant to the universe they live in and not a direct correlation to ours.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense whatsoever.
I think I get it.
Yeah.
But you can still extrapolate some decent messages from it. So it's not like it goes completely, you know.
It also managed to make Shakira relevant again, so that's something to applaud, I guess.
Yeah.
So I actually have that movie on Blu-ray. Yeah. It's great.
Yeah,
but
picking that one up again. So
yeah, plus I'm glad that movie was as successful as it was.
Yeah, it's like now I want them to do a sequel, but I'm also
they're going
to do a sequel and fucking.
They're gonna do a sequel, and 50% of the fan base is going to be mad.
Probably. So,
Because pretty much all of that people watching that sequel is going to be, will they or won't they?
Yeah.
But, yeah, so keep going.
Zootopia, that was good. Mm-hmm. I watched Rock and Rule, which was not good.
Yeah, that came out like right around the time when like heavy metal and Ralph Bakshi was a big deal.
Yeah, it's kind of a little bit like heavy metal, only dumb.
Yeah, it reminds me a lot of like sort of like a weird sort of like middle ground between like Ralph Bakshi and Don Bluth.
Yeah.
Only really, really stupid.
Yeah.
So, like Cool World, but yeah. Dumber.
Yeah. It did have a pretty decent soundtrack, though. It's like, so,
Yeah, it got like Cheap Trick and
North, Wind, and Fire and Iggy Pop and stuff like that. Well, actually, Iggy Pop was the singing voice of the main villain, so.
Yeah, I think was supposed to be based on David Bowie at some point.
I think so.
We say that, but if you ever get a chance to watch the movie, it's really, really goddamn stupid.
Yes.
It's like a... Oh, and also, who is it? Deborah Harry?
Yeah, Deborah Harry's in it.
From Blondie? Yeah, yeah, she's in it too.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was a really dumb movie, and I kind of wish I had my hour and a half back, but... okay. What else did I watch? Yeah, I watched Deadpool, which was amazing.
Yes.
So, oh my god, so good. I was not expecting that movie to be as just stupidly enjoyable as it was.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very irreverent, very self-aware. I think...
that's what Deadpool is.
Yeah. It's like 16 walls? So, it was a really, really good one of the Marvel Cinematic Universe type films. And, now I'm very much looking forward to the second one. So, can't wait to see that one. And finally, what else did I see? Oh, yeah, I saw Ready Player One. And I liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty much the sort of consensus I've been hearing is, it's all right.
Yeah, it's all right. It's like, they made some changes for time constraints and for basically just making it a little less one-dimensional.
Yeah.
Because, it was basically like the Wade Watts story in the book. So yeah. Artemis plays a bigger role in this movie. And,
yeah.
There's some scenes in there that stretch believability.
Yeah.
Like, this is kind of a minor spoiler, but you know how they all end up assembling in the end there?
Yeah, big epic showdown.
Yeah, that doesn't really happen that way. It's more like just all these people show up randomly.
Mm-hmm.
It's like in real life. It's like, how did you even know I was here?
Yeah. So in the book, there's actually like a big build-up to it.
Yeah.
Like, they're getting all these people behind them, and...
Yeah, it's, there's that announcement that goes out, and that's about all that happens in the this particular movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like then, just all the players, the Gunters in particular, the five that are supposed to be there, they just kind of sort of appear in real life. Yeah. Yeah.
So am I curious, did they really cut Ultraman completely out of it?
Yeah, they cut Ultraman.
All right. But I did hear that they've got a Gundam in there.
Yeah, that's what they replaced him with.
A Gundam.
Yeah.
And not just any Gundam, but the original.
Yeah. Nice. So it kind of worked out. Mechagodzilla still in there because they managed to get that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was all right. I kind of wish it was longer so it would have had some time to, to brew a little bit better. But... maybe the director's cut on Blu-ray will be a bit longer and a bit better, so we'll see how that goes.
Well, it's Spielberg, so...
Yeah, there's usually like 43 different editions of it by the time the movie comes out, so...
Yeah.
Yeah. So, that's pretty much my week. Lots of movies and just some random side stuff here and there.
All right. Well, what about you, Pat?
Well, I'm still looking for a place. I haven't found one yet. I'm just here because of the historic nature of this episode. I had to be here for it.
Mm-hmm.
But still Still looking for a place. Fairly encouraged by what I'm seeing. So I'm hoping that something can happen, you know, before too long. But other than that, I'm just kind of trying to get back to a point where I can start uploading stuff to the World Warriors database again and make sure people realize that I haven't dropped off the earth. Because it's just been a brutal week altogether. But that's pretty much what I've been doing.
All right. And as for me, well, I am almost done with Yakuza 6, at least as far as the main story is concerned. And goddamn, does that story just fucking go places. So, like, about half of the game actually takes place outside of Kamurocho. Half of it actually takes place in a tiny little shipping town in Hiroshima. And in case you're wondering, no, they don't bring that up. You know, the bomb, no, the A-bomb, no, they never bring it up at all. In fact, when they're describing the city of Hiroshima in the description of, in the game, they don't mention, all they mention, they mention, like, it's oysters, it's this famous confection that they're famous for, the scenery, the islands, the tourism, they never bring up the bomb. But it does have this weird sort of, this kind of commentary behind it about things that, you know, if, since we're Americans, it would be like one of those things where it's like, yeah, no, duh. But, like, Japanese, it's pretty radical shit. And progressive, too. Specifically about the idea of, okay, so, like, one of the big sort of overarching things of the Yakuza series is about being an orphan. You know, because Kiryu Kazuma, he's an orphan. His most of his best friends are orphans. They were raised in an orphanage that was run by the what was it, the Dojima family? And so after, you know, after Kiryu, you know, retires from the Yakuza, he opens up his own orphanage called Morning Glory. And he
Has been there for a hot minute in the series at this point.
And he raises a bunch of kids himself. But one of the big things about the story is that at this point in the story, the Chinese triads have started to make their way into Kamurocho. And there's also the, Sion Mafia.
Yeah,
you know, the Koreans start making their way, start showing up in the story again, too. And if you know anything about the relations between Japanese and Chinese and Koreans, I'll just keep stop it there. And not just that, but like the idea of being a person who is like maybe half Japanese, that may be like have like a Chinese parent or a Korean parent, or, and here's one of the big things that's actually in, that's like a big theme in this game. Hey Haishi, which for those of you don't know what that is, actually, hold on. Let me see. Heihai-Zi, I think, is the... Heihai-Zi. Those are children that are born outside of China's one-child policy. And because, as the game puts forth, because in some of the countrysides, the really big farms need, like, more people to work on it, some of the families will have more than one child. And because they live out in the sticks, they can sort of hide them away from the Chinese government. But there, what happens is that a lot of these triads actually start up a, they call it, they, in the game, they call it a human laundering service, but it's human trafficking. Where they put, bring Heihai-Zi children, smuggle them out of China into Japan to work, and they get them like full Japanese citizenship and everything. So, like, for example, some of the characters you run into in this game are actually Heihai-Zi. And like it actually brings up the fact that nobody in the game actually knows that these individuals are Heihai-Zi until they bring it up, because otherwise they look exactly like any other Japanese person. Which kind of brings up a kind of a theme that kind of brings us like, you know, you guys are all Asian. This sort of inter-ethnic conflict is kind of stupid.
Kind of.
I mean, granted, Japan isn't exactly innocent in this shit, but...
No.
Yeah. And, like, one of the main big characters in this turns out to be Heihachi, and he... It's a game, you gotta play it. It's the themes that it talks about are really important in a Japanese context.
Yeah.
But, oh yeah, and of course, wasting all my yen on Fantasy Zone, but...
As you do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see, do I want to play... You see, do I want to keep doing the story, or do I want to play some more Fighter V and see if I can finally beat Dural? Let me see if I can find some thugs to beat up so I can get some more yen.
Yep.
God, I'm so glad that they... basically have the game going on a sort of floating timeline, because otherwise I wouldn't get any shit done. Yeah, so other than that, I've been still taking advantage of my Netflix subscription. Specifically, I've been watching lots of Netflix anime, and there's a lot of great anime on Netflix if you ever get a chance. Stuff like obviously, like, the pretty much all of the Fate series is on there. Yep. Fate Stay Night, Fate Zero, Fate Apocrypha, which I started. I've basically been watching all three of them interchangeably.
Yeah, that series, that intellectual property just has so much potential. It'll never run out, really.
Nope.
Because you can always come up with new ideas for it.
Yep, and Tight Moon will always be swimming in cash. So
yes.
But yeah,
they deserve it.
Oh yeah, but yeah. So Fate Stay Night. Of course, the version we're talking about is Unlimited Blade Works, which is the one from UFO Table, which is amazing, like legit awesome. Fate Zero, which is pitch black dark.
Yeah,
like it's again
dark.
Well, it's a Genro Bocchi story, so it's gonna be just. Drowning in just what you expect from an Urobuchi story.
That reminds me, you ever watched Kamen Rider Gaim yet?
If I can find it, I will.
I will find it for you.
All right. Send me a message before we tap out here tonight and let me know. But yeah. And also Kakamori. I don't know if you guys have heard about that. That's like one of the Netflix originals that's getting like serious traction. It's basically a story about this kid who ends up in a super prestigious high school for like uber rich kids, and all of them are obsessed with gambling. And not just any kind of gambling, but like high stakes gambling. And it's notorious for the fact that other than like the guy, the sort of narrator of the story, there is no real good guy in the anime at all. They're all complete psychos. And fucking, it's basically Nightmare Face, the anime. Yeah. It's basically, it sort of is an idea of like, if you took sort of like the sort of shonen high school story, and what if you actually made it like tied it to like real world rules? And it turned out, it's pretty fucking terrifying. I mean, like, the lead girl in this is, like, a compulsive gambler. And, like, she gets straight, like, sexual pleasure out of it. Like, it's that type of anime, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But it's good. Holy shit, is it good. And other than that, I finally declared victory in the Fruit Fly War.
Good.
Yes, they are all gone. It took about a week and a half, but they're gone. So, oh god, those things are fucking everywhere.
All right.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, I do believe that's about it for that. So, has anybody got anything else they want to add before we move on?
No, I'm good.
I think I'm good.
All right. Well then, I now believe it is now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And today, I would like to tell you about a little piece of World War II history a lot of people don't know about. Now, part of the reason that the Nazis have managed to be just unending sources of just being a great villains, on top of the fact that they were probably the most worst, like, real true life villains of the 20th century, is the fact that they basically acted like comic book villains in real life. Because because of all the ridiculous schemes they kept coming up with, or kept planning, like, they were making, everybody knows how, like, the sort of whole Nazi ideology is based around the concept of, like, the Aryan.
Yeah.
You know, and the superior race, and trying to bring back Aryan purity to make a superior humanity. And their whole, like, mythology was based around, like, the whole concept, the whole Aryan thing to begin with is based on, like, this really stupid collection on, like, theosophy and occultism and weird myths of, like, you know, Hyperborea and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So they would make expeditions to the Arctic to try and find ruins of Hyperborea, you know?
Yeah.
Stuff like that. They believed that the stars were all made of ice. Really stupid shit like that, you know?
Yeah.
But that doesn't compare to the fact that they actually tried to create their own version of Jurassic Park at one time.
Okay.
Okay. So there are these two zoologist brothers named Lutz and Heinz Heck, and they were involved in animal breeding, you know, animal husbandry.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the big projects that they were tasked with was bringing back two extinct ancestors of cattle and horses. So no dinosaurs, unfortunately. They were called the Aurochs and the Tarpan. They were these huge, uber aggressive, like giant, you know, bulls and equines. Very big, very aggressive, bitey. And you're probably asking yourself, why the hell do they want to bring back these big animals? Are they gonna militarize them? Like, are they gonna weaponize them? Are they gonna, like, put them in uniforms and, like, paint swastikas on them and have them charge down in, like, big battalions to steamroll over the invading Western hordes? Or
see, now I'm ashamed that Bethesda hasn't thought of that.
Yeah, are they gonna tie torches on their tails and have them charge into battalions of Russian soldiers and light shit on fire?
Wolfenstein 3.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, no. Yeah, no. The reason they wanted to bring them back is because the Nazi leadership wanted to use them for hunting.
You see, that was where my immediate thinking was going.
And I don't mean, like, using them as hunting. I mean the Nazis hunting them.
Yeah.
As, like, hunting prey. They would have, like, these big... They would have, like, scores of dogs, and the idea was that they wanted to basically let these animals loose in the German forest and mountains so that they could go hunting for them. Yeah, and you know what's even weirder than this?
That could have gone horribly wrong.
Yeah, it gets weirder. Because it turns out that the Heck brothers, they were actually working on this project long before the Nazis got in contact with them.
Okay.
So that literally means
they just showed up into the picture and said, hey, cool, we're going to fund this.
Well, it's like they basically – this means that at some point the Nazis actually heard about these two mad scientists in the middle of the German wilderness and were like, you know what? I think we could put some Deutschmarks into this.
Yep.
And here's the thing. They kind of succeeded.
Hmm.
They didn't bring back the Aurochs. But they did actually create a new breed of cattle.
Hmm.
It's called the Heck cattle. And they are known for being aggressive and, you know, chargy. But unfortunately, they're only about the size of regular cattle. So, yeah.
Yeah, that was
Bethesda. You paying attention?
Yeah, just make yours bigger when you put them in the game.
Yeah, and that has been another installment of Brandon's Rant of Fact Talk. Okay. Oh, the wacky Nazis!
Seriously, how the fuck did Bethesda miss that one?
Maybe they're saving it.
Well, I mean, the thing is, the Nazis had so many bizarre schemes that. Yeah, you know, you can only put so many of them in a game. You can only put so many of them, you know. But, all right, so, time to start the show proper. And, wait a sec, let me see if Okra still isn't on. Okay. Let's start us off with, as we always, with the asshole of the week. And guess what, folks? Cosby is guilty. That's no longer a... Allegedly, no. He has been found guilty on 3 counts of felony sexual assault.
Yeah. I'll do my best to hide my shock.
Yeah. Yeah. And to think that all this started because Hannibal Buress did a routine on stage.
Yeah, sometimes things start from the strangest places.
A little close to home.
Yeah. Like, literally, that's how it started. Hannibal Buress, he was doing a... He was... you know, he's stand-up comic. He's doing his thing on the stage. And, you know, he's bringing up the fact, you know, but before this, what was, like, the thing that Cosby was, like, really infamous for? It was basically talking down to Black America from a pedestal that he thought he was on.
That and committing horrific crimes against the English language.
Oh, yeah. That's it. And the pudding pop and the jello and the chocolate cake. No. Oh, and he also starred in some of the worst goddamn movies of the 80s. There's also that.
Yeah.
Okay, Crimes Against Cinema as well. Throw that out.
He not only Ghost Dad, but also, what was it, Leonard Part 6? God, that movie is awful. Like, that movie was so bad, he himself bought up. Like, he himself actively tried to buy up every brand he could to get it destroyed. The only reason it still exists is because he failed.
Yeah.
And then we found out, and here's the thing. This isn't something that he's necessarily hidden. Like, if you've listened to some of his old comedy albums from, like, the 70s, he jokes about this shit.
Yeah.
Like, he jokes about, like, he's like, I had my friend here. He's like, you ever heard of Spanish Fly? He's like, no, what's that? And he's like, yeah, you put it in a girl's drink, and she's all, ooh, and, you know, it's... And then you start hearing these accusations, and then Hannibal Buress goes up, and he goes, yeah, you telling kids, you kids need to pull your pants. He's like, yeah, well, you're a rapist, Bill Cosby. And that's literally how this shit started.
Yep.
And then... Especially didn't help because of the fact that he did everything he could to just not acknowledge it. Because he was absolutely convinced that it was just something that was going to blow over. Because he'd been getting away with it for almost 50 years.
Yeah.
But it didn't work this time. All right, and it looks like Chris Logie has finally joined us. Hey there, Chris.
Hello.
Hello. All right, Chris, so you want to tell us what you've been up to this week?
Yeah, so I went and saw Avengers Infinity War this morning.
Yeah, apparently Thanos kills Dumbledore.
Yeah, he kills... I'll just list off everybody just so we're all on the same page.
Yeah.
yeah, I'm not going to spoil anything. Lots of weird shit happens. A lot of the best stuff is... as some of the stuff you saw in the trailer of, hey, these... Like, the Guardians meet Thor, and they have no clue what Thor is, and vice versa. And sort of these different groups that run into each other, that just have no clue what they're going on, because, like, the Guardians are just off in their own part of the universe.
Yeah.
They have no clue who anybody is on Earth. And, yeah, there's lots of really good stuff that goes on with that. And just based on the way it all goes down, I'm looking forward to seeing how they followed up with the second part, as well as just how the other Marvel movies that have been announced are going to follow this stuff up, I guess, for some of it at least. Because I know Captain Marvel is like a prequel. It happens like in the 90s, I think. So that'll be, so that is going to have nothing to do with anything that happens in this, but yeah, there's some interesting stuff that goes on. Yeah, that was good. I finished up the Drew Carey Show. Went through season 8 and 9. Definitely some good stuff there. The weird thing is that season 9 is just all mixed up. At that point, I believe the ratings had gone down so low that the ABC just did not give a shit about the show. So the order is just completely fucked up, which, trying to watch it in the way it aired, it did not make much sense. It's like, oh, Kelly's pregnant, okay, and there's this, the first episode shows you like a quick summary of like, oh, Mimi's house burnt down, Steve left, they're living with Drew now. It's like, wait, I don't remember any of that in season 8. What the hell is all this? You find out. So I have a list here of the actual like canonical order they should be in, and the numbers I'm going to list off is the number they aired actually. So when I say 16, that's the first episode of the season is technically the actual first episode canonically is number 16. So 16, 19, 20, 3, 17, 21, 22, 18, 4, 2, 5, 6, 1, 7, 9, 8, 10, 11, 12, 13, 23, 14, 15, 24, 25, 26. Like, that is just ridiculous.
It's like, and these people watch Sesame Street, for God's sake.
It's just ABC just wanting to get out of this deal, because I think they had signed like a 2-year deal or something like that for the show, and the ratings for season 8 were bad enough that they wanted to get out of it. And they couldn't. And I think it was that bad because it aired after Monday Night Football. So it would be on here on the East Coast, like 10:30, 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
It's like, well, no wonder nobody fucking watched this thing. Because you got to watch a fucking football game to go hopefully be able to watch it. And so season 9, a lot of these were, they did double episodes. So they aired one full hour of it. And they did all during the summer. So they basically did as much as they could to make sure nobody could watch this shit. And that's... that's unfortunate. I definitely remember watching some of this, some of these episodes, especially the finale stuff. There's one really good episode where Drew's dad dies, which is a weird thing that, because it skips around, it's like, wait, he's dead? Wait, when did that happen?
Yeah. And
it's like, oh, no, he fell off a roof. It's like, wait, he died off of that? It's like, what the hell is this? So he dies, and Drew orders a coffin for him. He knows he was in the Marines, so he's going to order him a special Marine coffin off the internet, and something goes wrong, and he gets a Kiss Army coffin that has a button on it that plays God Gave Rock and Roll to You. And there's a good bit there where his old unit's buddies come in, see the Kiss Army off, coffin, and are immediately about ready to leave. Drew eventually convinces them to stay. But yeah, it's a pretty funny episode. For an episode, it's about a character dying. In this whole season, actually, they trimmed down a lot of the characters. It pretty much focuses solely on Drew, Kelly, Mimi, Lewis and Oswald. They got rid of Steve. They wrote Wick out. The people at the Neverending Store are out of the picture for the most part. And the show is shot really differently, where it was pretty obvious, especially when they would do sort of fourth wall bending scenes where you could see that it's an actual set. They actually built out the set, so it's a full four walls. And they do different camera angles that, for what I could tell, kind of seemed like a modern ABC show, comedy show. Like what's probably there with some of their more modern stuff. I was like, oh, this looks way different than like a one camera setup. Mm. Where you just have the one view and all that. But yeah, it's pretty neat. Yeah, that was that was a good show to kind of just dive back into and see how that all went. As for games, I've been playing more of Vostok Inc. I am working towards getting to the last solar system. I've been kind of getting over this weird hump where trying to upgrade the installations I have on the various planets to get more money, and that was going pretty slow for a bit. So I just let it sit there for several hours and just grind out money. Then that got me over the hump where now I'm making a lot more. And yeah, I'm looking forward to getting to the end. And I should be able to get all the trophies. They're not too hard. A lot of the ones I have at this point are based on the weird like LCD style mini games that they have in one of the parts of the game where you're collecting these executives and such. It's just like, hey, get 100 in this mini game. It's like, okay, that's not too hard. But yeah, I've also been playing more God of War. I have gotten to a pretty interesting part of the game. I'm looking forward to putting some more time into it, but just been real busy with work this week, so haven't had too much time to put into it. And yeah, that's been kind of it.
Hmm. All right.
Well, I guess we'll continue with where we were. When we left off, we were talking about how, you know, Cosby has finally been found guilty.
Yeah.
It's really a big shame is that a lot of those incidences can't be there can't be any action taken on them because it's just it's been too long.
Yeah, it's been like 20, 30 years.
Yeah.
You know, or even longer, because he's been getting away with this shit for almost 50 years now, so.
Yeah, like this one was like 15 years old, something like that. So it's like just old enough to, or just recent enough to not be too much of a problem.
Yeah. And let me just, I also want to say before we move on, because it's really pissing me off, there's a bunch of trolls out there that are pretending to be black people who are trying to make it like they think Cosby has been wrongly accused or framed or whatever, and they're trying to like make it about like evil women or something like that, or trying to make it out like this is OJ all over again, you know, all that shit, and it sucks. So fucking stop it.
Yeah. But, did you see what he did when the decision was announced?
Oh, yeah. So you know how Cosby is famous for being a clean comedian, relatively speaking? Like, yeah. And for the record, he was really good at it. Like, he was legit. His old specials, he was legit really good at it. Yeah.
There's a reason why a lot of people are angry that he was doing this all behind that stuff.
Yeah. Well, as soon as the sentence was headed down and he found out, you know, his bail and shit like that, he basically just started dropping the F-bomb over and over again. Very, very loudly.
Just yelling at the prosecution. And just cursing them out. Just very, very angry. Which, when they had the mistrial about a year ago, when he got out of the courtroom, he was basically yelling the Fed Albert catchphrase. Hey, hey, hey.
Yeah.
So that's how serious he took all this stuff.
Yeah. God, it's, you know, but it's one of those things where you think you know a person.
Yeah.
You know? But I guess what really got, like I said earlier, what really sort of kicked this off, and I mentioned this earlier, and since Chris is with us, what really kicked this all off was, you know, Hannibal Buress doing a routine on stage and someone recording it on their iPhone. Like, that's literally how all this started. And here's where we are now. So that just shows you how powerful that new media actually is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess The Simpsons won.
Yeah.
So when The Simpsons were getting big, it was The Simpsons versus The Cosby Show.
Mm-hmm.
And then people said Bart Simpson was the bad influence.
Yeah.
But yeah, you go back to the 90s now, you're like, yeah, that was nothing.
Yeah. But anyway, now that we've got our asshole of the week out of the way, we can go for our hero of the week. And our hero of the week is a group of truck drivers. Actually, 13 semi truck drivers. There's an overpass that they all lined up under because apparently somebody was threatening to jump, and they were trying to prevent that person from jumping.
Yep, this was on in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. I'm trying to figure out where exactly it was in Detroit. I don't know. I don't recognize any of this. Coolidge, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
He was on the overpass, threatening to jump. The police arrived and closed the freeway in both directions. Mm-hmm. But also managed to get a hold of a bunch of semi truck drivers to line up in each of the lanes. 13 of them total. So that if he did actually jump, he would most likely land on one of them and hopefully prevent anything serious from happening. He didn't actually jump. So yeah, but it was a really cool way of potentially preventing a really bad thing from happening.
Yeah. So, you know, congrats to those 13 truck drivers. They did something, managed to save a life. So, that's good for them. All right, so I guess we're meeting up with, starting off with the proper show proper. And that starts off with, unfortunately, we have a death in the news, a celebrity death, Bob Darrow, who was, for those who don't know, he's like, okay, who's Bob Darrow? He was the creator of Schoolhouse Rock.
Yep, he was a fairly well-known jazz musician
mm-hmm.
In the 50s and 60s. Even worked with Miles Davis.
Yep.
Released a song that Miles Davis immediately wanted to do his own cover of,
mm-hmm.
Which is obviously a big deal.
Yep.
And sort of as that money started going dry in the late 60s, got a gig. Let's see if I can find. In 1971, with the jazz money running thin, Darrow was asked by his boss at the advertising company where he had a day job mm-hmm. to set the multiplication tables to music. His boss cited his children's ability to remember Hendrix and Rolling Stones lyrics, but not their school lessons.
Mm-hmm.
As he says, I got the idea that 3 is a magic number.
Mm-hmm.
Then I looked in the magic book, and sure enough, 3 is one of the magic numbers. The concept
yep.
then became the song 3 is a Magic Number. The project became the Grammy-nominated Multiplication Rock.
Mm-hmm.
Originally intended as a school workbook, the concept was pitched and sold to ABC executive Michael Eisner, becoming the first of the long-running Schoolhouse Rock series of educational cartoons that became an all but inseparable part of the 70s, 80s, and I would still say 90s.
Oh, yeah.
That definitely played a lot then.
Yeah, they were still playing when I was a kid, so.
Yeah, everybody knows, like, I'm Just Bill.
Conjunction. Conjunction Junction is like the one that is the most famous, or at least the most popular, because it's a legitimately good song, believe it or not.
did a great job of creating these educational songs that were also just good music.
Yeah.
They were fun to sing, even if you were way too old technically for them.
Yeah.
There's a lot of videos on YouTube of him performing these live, mm-hmm. even at his late age. In the last, 10 years. He died at, 92?
Yeah.
94. Hmm. He was still performing some of his music at, 92.
Yeah.
Last couple years. And still sound pretty
weirdly
good.
Weirdly enough, a lot of those old jazz guys lived fucking forever.
Mm. Yeah.
Like freaking Miles That's Davis, true. He lived, well into, the early 90s. So.
Yeah.
So, and, Satchmo, Louis Armstrong, I mean, he actually had a number one hit in the 1960s.
Hmm.
That's how big he was.
Yeah.
But, sad that he's gone, but holy crap, he left a hell of a legacy.
Yeah.
And the people they still use those videos, too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I have the DVD set of all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. And because it works.
Yeah. Or it's just entertaining.
Yeah. But We are going to move on there because some seriously historic news happened today. Like, so historic, I didn't think I was going to see it in my lifetime. I don't think any of us were going to see it in our lifetime, to be honest. No.
Yeah. But talked about it last week, saying that the talks were going to happen. We just didn't expect them to go like, okay, yeah, we're done.
Yeah, like to happen this quickly and this successfully. Yeah. But yes, after 68 long years of violence and attrition, the Korean War is finally, finally coming to an end.
Yeah.
This war started back in 1950. It all started it pretty much started almost immediately after World War II. Because as everybody knows, Korea during World War II, up until, you know, the end of it, had been conquered. Well, before World War I, it had been conquered by Japan and basically ruled over by Japan as a client state, you know. And then after World War I, you know, Japan got to keep all the shit that they conquered before then. So then World War II comes around and Japan decides, you know, we're going to start expanding and creating, you know, the East Asian co-prosperity sphere. And of course, as you can imagine, just as like it was in China, there were, you know, guerrilla movements happening inside Korea of different ideologies and factions. One of them was Kim Il-sung, who failed, for lack of a better term. So he ended up escaping and living in exile in Siberia, which is how he ended up getting in contact with the Soviet government. But after World War II, since, you know, the Soviet Union was part of the Allies, then they had to start, you know, dividing up territory to see who was going to get who. And Korea's was... let's just say that Korea's was not pretty. So basically, North and South Korea was divided almost immediately after the war. And the northern half, of course, was under the jurisdiction of the Soviet Union, and the bottom half under the United States. And up in the north, the Soviets actually kept a fairly hands-off approach, at least at first. They did try to, you know, insert their own candidates for elections that would be friendly to Soviet interests, but otherwise they didn't, you know, try to invade or anything like that.
Yeah.
Now, South Korea was a little bit different. South Korea actually did have a democratic election, but they ended up getting overthrown by the United States military, and they installed a dictator.
America.
Yep. And then, of course, shit in North Korea started to break down because of the shit that was going in South Korea. Eventually, what we now know as the Democratic People's Republic of Korea was constructed, and Kim Il-sung was installed as leader by the Russians. And then Kim Il-sung got this wild hair up his ass and said, "We need to liberate the rest of the country." So he crossed the 38th parallel, and that's how the war started. And, of course, as everybody knows, up until, you know, today, the Korean War technically didn't end. Hostilities ended, but for years afterward, there had been this standoff between the two. As South Korea eventually did do away with their dictatorship in the 80s and became a democracy, North Korea became increasingly more and more isolated. And remember, what set them apart from, say, their other communist bloc countries in Asia like China or Vietnam was that, unlike China or Vietnam, they were supported by the Soviets. China, of course, after the Sino-Soviet split, sort of became the other big communist power in Asia. And that's where you started seeing, you know, Maoist uprisings happening in India and Indonesia and all types of places. And so, of course, when the Soviet Union collapsed, basically North Korea became the most sort of the most, they call it the Hermit Kingdom for a reason.
Yeah.
Because it basically became so isolated after so many years of just being constantly fucked with by the Russians and with the Americans, conditions within the DPRK deteriorated very badly. And, of course, this isn't helped by the political repression, which, you know, understand all the stuff that happened in the North Korea did not happen in a vacuum. It happened because of the Cold War. The Cold War has a lot to do with it. But this is still a fairly repressive one-party state we're talking about. And so, you know, the labor camps and the hunger and all that stuff, yeah, that's probably real. But unfortunately, the truth is, we've never really been able to get, like, the full truth of what's going on in North Korea because of that isolation. And anything that comes out of North Korea, anything you hear inside or outside, comes through this filter.
Usually from China or Japan.
Yeah.
Sort of doing research or whatever.
Yeah. Sometimes, and it's because of that you'll occasionally get like those really outrageous stories of like how they had someone executed by being ripped apart by dogs or having his uncle executed by an anti-aircraft gun. The one about how supposedly everyone in Korea had to start wearing Kim Jong-un's hairstyle. Yeah, it turned out all that stuff didn't happen. The one about how he had his ex-girlfriend killed, and then, like, last year she showed up again at a party meeting. Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's a very good way of disproving a rumor.
Yeah. But unfortunately, what that also does is it puts doubt on some of the serious issues that actually do happen in North Korea.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, we really just don't know. You know, there have been, like, foreign observers who've gone into North Korea, you know, and, gone to Pyongyang. Because, you know, they give, you know, the North Korean government actually invites foreigners to come to the country, and they give a tour and everything.
There are, like, tour companies that do it on the, pretty much on the down low.
Yeah. But the thing is that it's very obviously guided.
Yeah.
Because they very distinctly don't want you to see, like, what's happening out in the countryside.
Yeah, where, usually when there's, like, an American that gets into trouble over there, it's because they're on one of those tours.
Yeah.
They don't listen to their tour guides.
Yeah.
Don't.
Or they do something. Or they do something stupid like steal a poster. You know,
yeah.
Like that one guy did. Which, for the record, that was just stupid.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but it was. I mean, if you wanted a poster, I'm pretty sure they could have given you one. You know,
just they could
have, maybe they had a gift shop somewhere you could have bought one. Or hell, they might have even given you one. They'd be like, oh, yes, of course, American, we shall give you one. Here, take it back, put it on your headset, spread the great glory of Juche ideology. But no.
I imagine there are probably people that have seen that stuff and just made their own versions on the internet.
Oh, there's plenty of them. You can find them. But yeah, and by the way, that doesn't justify how he ended up getting treated.
Yeah, he eventually died.
Yeah. Now, whether or not they did it or it happened because they didn't have the proper medications to treat a condition he had, no one's really sure. But it was tragic. But anyway, so yes, after 68 years, the Korean War is finally coming to an end. They have signed a treaty and a declaration. They are planning on taking apart the demilitarization zone within the year. They are planning on slowly doing away with the demarcation line. And they're going to be uniting under – there's a big sports event that's coming up, and both North and South Korean athletes are going to unite together and fight under the label of Korea.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, do not expect this sort of reunification to necessarily go off without a hitch, because there is a lot of shit.
There's baggage.
There's some serious bad blood between the two sides, and cultural issues as well, because North Korea is a very sort of, like, its society, because, you know, of the constant isolation and the fear, you know, them trying to, after years of basically being like a country under siege, basically, they've developed a kind of warrior society that they're sort of, you know, and sort of like the whole ideology of Sung-gun and Juche sort of is sort of surrounded with that. And now all of a sudden you've got this demarcation line slowly disappearing again, and you're going to have that against, you know, South Koreans who have lived in very good economic booming for the last 10-20 years with plenty of, you know, they haven't had to worry about starvation or famines or you know, having to rationing something as simple as meat or toilet paper. So it's going to be, there's going to be some serious growing pains.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me a little about between East and West Germany, only on a much, much bigger scale.
Yeah. Well, the difference is that, you know, in East Germany, people could actually had, you know, the people in East Germany basically dissolved right around the time that the Soviet Union dissolved. So up to that point, they had the communist bloc that they could go out and travel in. Hmm. North Korea hasn't had that, really hasn't had that kind of luxury over the past 20 years or so. No. I mean, they can go to China if they try, but Chinese are kind of they're not too keen on having North Korean refugees coming into their borders. Remember what happened last time when we had the big nuclear standoff? The Chinese started putting soldiers on the border.
Yeah,
nope.
That's the reason why. but so
you also mentioned denuclearization. We should point out.
Yeah, they're actually, which for the record, and I want to say this, that's actually, the DPRK has never been, you know, they've always been open about it. It's like, we are more than willing to go ahead and start, you know, denuclearizing and taking apart our nuclear program as long as, you know, the bourgeois imperialists, you know, stand down.
Hmm. And yeah, they want to trade that for a seat at the big boy table with the rest of the countries.
Yeah. Hmm. And unfortunately, the fact that they now have a bomb, you know, is probably the reason why people are finally taking them seriously. Because unfortunately, that's kind of what you have to do to get noticed in this world. Also, as much as I hate to admit it, Donald Trump and the folks in South Korea have said as much, Donald Trump calling Kim Jong-un's bluff is probably one of a small reason why this has all started.
Yeah.
To be clear, the current Korean Prime Minister, God, what's his name? I feel bad that I don't, because he's pretty much done something that I don't think that generation.
South Korea?
Yeah.
Moon?
Yeah, Moon.
I'm sure they're in the link, I think.
Hold on, I got it on my Facebook. Hold on, don't worry. I got it. Yeah, Moon Jae-in.
Yeah,
Moon Jae-in. Who he was big enough to actually, you know, he actually started doing this shit before Donald Trump became president. There's been for the last pretty much since 2012. There's been people within the South Korean establishment that have been reaching out to the North Koreans. Yeah. But once their recent prime minister was ousted after the corruption scandal and that weird witch cult she was involved in. They called it the Candlelight Revolution. The person that came in who was much more center-left was also much more open about the fact that, you know, it's time to get over all this international hatred and tell the Americans to go suck the big fat one and finally bury the hatchet. And also to Kim Jong-un, who, I mean, let's be honest, he has achieved something that neither his father or his grandfather ever could. In fact, there hasn't been a North Korean leader to step over the demarcation line since 1953.
Yeah.
Yeah, the last person to do that was Kim Il-sung himself, and he never did it again afterwards.
I wouldn't be surprised if that's just the benefits of modern technology.
Yeah.
Being able to actually learn more about
the other side. Yeah,
just be.
Well, didn't he go to school in Europe?
Kim Jong Un.
Yeah,
yeah, he did.
So he's also more westernized.
Yeah, he is. You know, I mean, his dad was born and educated in the Soviet Union. So,
yeah, he would kidnap directors to make movies for him.
Yeah,
as you do.
Yeah,
but The sad truth, though, is that probably the biggest obstacle to Korean unification over the last few decades has probably been the U.S. Because the U.S. has sort of been using the whole thing as sort of its bargaining chip.
Yeah.
And this whole thing is, because if you read like the translations of the peace treaty and the declarations and stuff, they basically have told the U.S. to go fuck off.
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up.
Yeah. Donald Trump sort of belligering and being belligerent and stuff is kind of what kind of sped up the process.
Yeah. Unintentionally, let's point out.
Unintentionally, of course, because I don't think he could do anything intentionally to save his life. But, yeah. So...
Kim Jong-un just ran into... Oh, this guy's actually crazy. Yeah. We need to get the other Korea on track with us.
Yeah.
We don't want that guy...
We didn't sign up for this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't want him to go Syria on us.
Yeah. And for the record, I know because people have been bringing it up, they actually came really close to doing something like this back in the early 90s. And, of course, that ended up breaking down. But there is something – people are saying that this is going to go much further. Simply because, for one thing, you've got sort of the first that they've done. Like I said, not only did Kim Jong-un cross the demarcation line, but Moon Jae-in actually crossed the demarcation line into North Korea as well, which, by the way, was completely unscripted. Mm. So that, in and of itself, is like a big sign. And the fact that they've already signed this declaration and they're getting ready to take the DMZ apart, like they've actually gone that far and have declared, no, we are going to start taking this thing apart within the next year. Mm. Holy shit.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Goddamn, the Olympics are going to be fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. At some point, it just comes to a point where it's like the original reason for the fight and the animosity just doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah. There's a generation that's born. It's like, you know, this is stupid.
Yeah.
We've been fighting this for so long. Why have we been doing it?
And this is our parents or grandparents' war.
Yeah.
What do we have to do with any of this?
Yeah.
Especially now, the further away they got away from the conflict. So.
Yeah. And, And you know that China has also been involved in this, too. I think after the last scare they had, Xi Jinping got in contact with Kim Jong-un. He's like, yeah, look, you little bastard, you need to start talking to him.
Yeah.
We see where this is going, and we don't like it.
No. You know they're our number one trading partner, right? Yeah, we don't want to jeopardize that shit. So start... You know, get your shit together.
Yeah.
Start acting your age.
All together.
Get your shit together. Start acting your age. I'll goddamn it.
Yeah.
And I guess the good thing for at least North Korea is they're going to be able to bring in a lot of money for tourism.
Yeah. And official food, tourism. Too. Also food.
Yeah.
And that's going to be necessary because one of the things, one of the big issues with North Korea, and it actually isn't just the system they have. Most of North Korea is mountainous, and so like 30 or 40% of their land is actually
farmable.
Yeah, which considering the amount that they actually do have is a miracle in and of itself. But you know, So also because of this treaty, maybe people will finally get a better idea of how North Korea actually is.
Hmm.
You know, that filter will start disappearing.
Yeah.
As they get the culture shock of learning that, these white people are not as bad as we think they are.
Yeah.
We've been told they are.
Yeah. You know,
just keep them far away from Donald Trump.
Yeah, just keep your eyes on the U.S. and the military-industrial complex, because if they think they can fuck it up to their advantage, they will.
Yeah.
But, true. But what it has done, though, is that it's made Kim Jong-un come off like the reasonable one.
Yeah.
Which I got to give him credit. He has actually managed to make DPRK the reasonable party in this discussion, or at least perceived to be. Mm. But, all right. So, yeah, holy shit. That literally happened.
Yeah, just this morning.
Yep. All right, so moving on. Some more good news. You know how the Trump administration has been trying to stop DACA, close it down? Mm-hmm. Well, a federal judge has basically told Trump that you're going to need to keep that shit going for another 90 days.
Mm. Or they're going to open it in 90 days.
Yeah.
Yeah, so basically the federal judge ruled that they're not going to be able to shut it down, at least not for the time being.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Judge Sean Bates concluded that the wind-down of DACA was arbitrary and capricious because the Department of Homeland Security failed to, quote, adequately explain its conclusion that the program was unlawful. The judge also accused the government of providing meager legal reasoning to support its decision, which has been a huge theme for this administration in the past year and a half.
Yeah.
They've tried to do a lot of things, and most of it tends to get knocked back. It's just like, yeah, you can't do this shit. You haven't provided any sort of reasoning,
no
logical reasoning why we need this like travel ban, why we need this end of the DACA thing, why we need to get rid of transgender troops, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, mostly it's distraction.
Yeah.
I think we've come to realize. By the way, did you hear that there was that one, some members of the GOP in the House of Representatives are wanting to nominate Trump for the Nobel Peace Prize?
What?
Because of what happened this morning?
No. I would give it to Moon.
I would give it to both Moon and Kim jointly.
Yeah, that too.
Because they definitely deserve it. But, no.
Trump just did what he always did and sat there with his thumb up his ass.
Yeah, but... Yeah, you know that in a small place, it's got to be eating him up inside. Because he's like, I did this! He knows deep inside, no, I didn't do this. And not only that, but in their documents, they've told me to go fuck off. So, and then now you got this shit with DACA basically getting denied and there's other stuff happening with the Cohen case, too. Because, by the way, I don't know if anybody knows this, but they've actually, the Stormy Daniels case, the Stormy Daniels suit? The judge has actually said that they're going to have to delay the case for 90 days because, according to the judge, it's a very, very big possibility that Michael Cohen's going to be indicted.
Yeah. Are we surprised?
Yeah.
This whole thing is too hot to go on it right now.
Yeah. But speaking of dumbasses in the Trump administration, so everybody knows that Trump was had a pick for the veterans, for the VA, Ronnie Jackson, Ronnie Jackson was the guy who came out and said that, he had done the exam on the president and said he was like a pound under obesity or whatever. Isn't that the same guy?
Yeah, on the BMI scale.
Yeah.
Which is a stupid scale to begin with.
Yeah, it is. Well, he's dropped out for running for VA because we found out that he's kind of an ass.
Yeah, and there's maybe, I don't know, you could go either way on this stuff because there's a lot of things that came out. And none of it has really been verified.
Yep.
It's a really weird sort of nomination process where... they just let all this stuff get out to the public. No real verification. Maybe some of it's true. Maybe some of it's not. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually kind of a good example of what Trump's style of politicking has done, already done in the way politics are done.
Yeah.
Because, you wouldn't have all this stuff coming out without it being verified in some way.
Yeah.
Or most nominees in the past. And now it's just I heard, he got real drunk and just banging on this woman's door at this hotel they were staying at. And it's like, I haven't seen anybody like verifying that stuff.
Nope.
But yeah, so potentially his reputation has been, shredded now.
Yeah.
Probably wasn't the most perfect person, but I don't know that you could say that the Army or whichever branch he came out of, that they somehow looked aside, because some of the stuff would get his medical license revoked if it was.
Yeah, and probably would have gotten him court-martialed too.
Yeah, it's like, so that stuff probably didn't happen.
Yeah. But keep in mind that Donald Trump didn't help matters, because he basically came out and he's like, you know, I wouldn't do it if I was him, you know.
Yeah.
Just, you know, just like throwing wood on the fire, basically. And because that's how big of an asshole he is.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those things that's just happening now because Trump succeeded that, now, hey, anything goes, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be tough for actual good people to run for office in at least bigger roles, because it's potentially going to be pretty easy for other people to just make shit up and just try and ruin their reputation, same way they did to Hillary for a lot of things.
Pretty much.
And it's like, oh, she didn't do half the things you said she did, but you just kept saying it over and over again, so people are like, well, he keeps saying it. It must be true.
Yeah.
It's like, no, he's a liar. He lies all the time. He's done it for 30, 40 years.
Yep.
Yeah. And it was like, it wasn't even like the legit stuff that you could get Hillary and Bill on. Like,
it wasn't even like, you know, Benghazi stuff or.
Yeah.
Even then, that stuff went way overboard.
No, if you really want to go after the Clintons, you should go over the Clinton Foundation and how they treated Haiti.
Yeah.
Like after that hurricane, or how they basically kept, you know, prisoners around his servant in the governor's mansion when he was governor of Arkansas.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically slave labor, in other words. Yeah, if you want to get on to them about something, get on to them about that.
No, yeah. We're gonna talk about this Russia thing.
Nope.
Because the uranium one thing where she was not involved in any of it.
No, but it
involved, like, a bunch of other branches and people that were independent of her and have said that they would have done it now if it was available to do.
Yeah, well, moving on from there. So Scott Pruitt is currently the head of the EPA, and he's basically doing everything he can to destroy the world as we know it. Because apparently either he didn't grow up watching Captain Planet, or he hated Captain Planet so much he wanted to be one of the villains. Basically, he has come out declaring that burning wood is carbon neutral.
What?
Yeah. Saying it's on par with wind and solar energy.
Yeah. No.
No.
Just, no.
No.
Yeah, it's basically a huge misunderstanding of some of the actual truths about that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But he also... Is he the guy that claims he's a geologist? And he's not. He was a geology major. He didn't go far enough to get his PhD, PhD in geology. But he still claims he's a geologist. And this sort of stuff shows you exactly why he's not. But yeah, the Smithsonian site sort of lay down a number of facts just to lay it down. So biomass is only sustainable on long time scales. So the idea that forest biomass is carbon neutral is not wrong. Trees absorb carbon from the atmosphere as they grow. So if a tree is burned for fuel, the thinking goes another can be planted to replace it. And then that replacement tree should eventually reabsorb the carbon, but that's on a long term scale. It's not anything that happens anytime soon.
Yeah.
Forests need proper management to remain carbon neutral. So yeah, even if a tree is planted, for every tree converted to fuel pellets, trees regrown on plantations don't store the same carbon as natural forests. There's a recent study that suggested it takes about 40 to 100 years for a managed forest to capture the same amount of carbon as a natural forest. And since most plantation forests are harvested at 20-year intervals, they will never make it to the carbon neutral point. So carbon emissions don't just come from burning. Forest carbon is not just stored in their wood. A large amount is stored in the soil, and you can't take the branches without impacting the soil. Soils can hold up to twice as much carbon as the trees above, depending on the type of forest and amount of leaf litter and debris on the forest floor. Exposing that material to more light and elevated temperatures spurs faster microbial breakdown of the soils and release of stored carbon. See, one study from 2017 suggests forest soils are already giving off more carbon as the world warms.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, the EPA has not yet completed scientific analysis of this stuff. So he's just making a decision before that stuff finishes. Yeah, the announcement comes before the EPA Science Advisory Board has finished its deliberations. Something that the EPA acknowledges in its press release, which states the board's process has not yet resulted in a workable applied approach.
Mm.
But yeah, the EPA claims that the change will boost rural economies and the timber industry as well as reduce pests and wildfires.
Mm-hmm.
And the last point, reliance on wood could spark widespread clear cutting. The EU is already relying on burning wood as carbon neutral energy source to meet the Paris Accord emission goals. And one of the big arguments used to support this switch to wood is that the industry would rely on the limbs, chips, and sawdust produced by logging and milling that would already be incarcerated, incinerated. But in reality, that's not what's happening. And yeah, essentially trying to declare this simple concept as fact is not true. There's a lot of other stuff that goes into it, why it's not really true, especially as like a short-term solution. That's why we should just keep investing in solar energy, wind energy, especially as a way to generate new jobs.
Yeah.
As, you know, oil production lessons and coal,
yeah,
all that sort of stuff.
Also invest in those worms that eat, you know, plastic.
Yeah, that'd be a good
idea. We talked about those last week.
Yeah, putting your money behind some of those probably would be a very lucrative thing to be doing.
Yeah, I would put some, I would buy, you know, not, just a little, just a little. It'll grow pretty fast, though, so. Okay. But, yeah, so moving on from that, finally, something that's happened. So, a long time, several years ago, at least 40-something years ago, there was this serial killer going around named the Golden State Killer. And for years, no one was able to find out who this guy was. And then, this week, the case finally broke, and we found out who the guy was.
Yep.
It was an ex-cop.
Yeah, ex-cop named Joseph James D'Angelo.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there was a lot of weird stuff that came into this. Let's see, detectives matched a discarded DNA sample from his home to evidence from the investigation that ended up leading to them coming to the conclusion that he did it.
Yeah.
And there's also another part of it, a book by, was it Melissa? I forget what her name is. Pat Oswalt's wife, who just passed away.
Yeah.
The book that he helped finish after her passing.
Yeah.
Was her sort of investigation into this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
That also helped help the police solve this case.
Yeah. So, as for, like, his crimes, he's believed to have killed 12 people and to have raped 50 women.
He was a huge menace, just went all over the place.
Yeah, but yeah.
He worked as a police officer in Exeter and Auburn between 1973-1979. They say very possibly he was committing these crimes during the time he was employed as a peace officer.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, they're going to be looking into whether it was actually on the job.
Mm. Yeah. Which, I mean, that would be, let's be honest, that would be prime opportunity for a scumbag like this. So. Mm. But, yeah, he is in jail now. They have him. You know, theoretically, I mean, if, you know, theoretically, if he goes to jail, he's going to fucking die there.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
It's
just another sort of example of how going back to some of these, you know, lost cases, can actually, be beneficial with a fresh set of eyes.
Yeah. Yep. And to think that it was a true crime book by Patton Oswalt's wife that ultimately kickstarted all of this.
Yeah.
It all just kind of came together real quick. Like,
yeah.
The past
I hope somebody's paying attention because there's a movie in here somewhere.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's somebody is like, oh.
Get Oswald in as executive producer, because...
Yeah.
I'm sure I wouldn't be surprised if it's on, you know, HBO or Netflix. Or Hulu.
Yeah. So with the way it's going now, I am convinced that we're going to find who the Zodiac Killer was within the next decade.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, theoretically, he's still out there, so...
But, I didn't know who it is. It's Ted Cruz.
He's not really pushing up daisies.
Yeah. So moving on. We got a story about an individual who... I find it dumb, but I also understand him, because I understand this feeling, and to be honest, this is probably something I would have ended up doing, too. There's this mailman, this postal worker in Brooklyn, who was recently discovered that he had hoarded about 17,000 pieces of mail. Why did he do this? Was he, like, trying to collect money or checks or something? No. He did it because he had become overwhelmed with the workload.
Yep.
And he figured if he just stashed some of it away, it would make his workload lighter, and it just kind of got out of control from there.
Yeah. He said that he made sure to deliver the important mail.
Yeah.
I assume this is probably a lot of the spam crap, flyers and all that.
Yeah, the junk mail, stuff like that. Yeah. Which, to be honest, if that's the case, then in my view, you should be giving him a fucking medal.
Yeah, though I'm sure that's probably a big part of the UPS's earnings.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Because that's the country kind of country we live in.
Yep. He's charged with delaying or detaining mail.
Mm-hmm.
He worked there for 16 years. Federal officials say they arrested him after receiving a tip about a car owned by him that contained 20 full mailbags. So he didn't even do a great job of hiding it.
Nope.
They found 10,000 pieces of mail in his car, 6,000 pieces in an apartment, and 1,000 in his work locker. Like, if he had just stashed this somewhere, like, threw it out, dumpster somewhere, he probably would have gotten away with it.
Yeah,
it's true. Just like,
you know, this kind of has... all of the makings of, like, a Scooby-Doo plot.
Oh, yeah. yeah, but...
Harry Potter and the Missing Credit card bill.
But, like I said, I understand this guy, because this is legit something I probably would have done if I got overwhelmed with the workload. but, yeah. And, fucking hell, man. Well, next up, we got some Amazon stories. First one, another example of Amazon's slow march to world domination. Amazon Key now has a new feature that lets them put packages in your trunk of your car or automobile of choice.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is for Prime subscribers. It's available in 37 cities. It involves, General Motors and Volvo right now.
Mm-hmm.
They have, like, smart lock technology in their cars.
Yep.
And it's essentially is an evolution of the Amazon Key stuff we talked about a while back, where they let you get into the your front door.
Yeah.
Sort of drop it off inside.
What could possibly go wrong?
Gee, I wonder.
Well, you see, something like this, I could actually see more people being okay with. Because, yeah, they can open the door, but they can't start the car.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they say that the tech is...
They can still plan.
Yeah, but also it'd probably be pretty easy to link two and two together and figure out, oh, this guy is the one that stole the car.
Mm.
Especially when they arrive there in their own car.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, now you got two cars. How are you going to do this?
Yeah.
So they've been beta testing this in California and Washington State for the past 6 months. They put out a video that shows it off. A woman says she likes getting diapers delivered to her car because it means her toddlers can nap without being disturbed by the doorbell.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so the service is Amazon Prime, GM Volvo, model 2015 or newer, with active OnStar and Volvo on-call accounts. They're going to add more other brands and such over time. Packages weigh over 50 pounds, are larger than 26 by 21 by 16 inches in size. Require a signature, are valued over $1,300, or come from a third-party seller, not eligible. Amazon signed a two-year deal with GM and Volvo. And they're not going to make additional money with the service, but they see it as an added convenience. They can market to their customers, which I guess makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, if you're somebody who's at work, you know, like during the day, and you're expecting a delivery, it's like, well, okay, yeah, just put it in the trunk. I'll drive home with it.
That makes
a lot more sense.
Yeah. So the way it works, you add your car to your Amazon Key app, include a description of the vehicle so they know what to look for. It needs to be parked within a certain radius of the of an address used for Amazon deliveries. So either at home or work, driveways, parking lots, parking garages, and street parking are all eligible locations, just as long as it's not at some random address across town. So after purchasing an item and selecting a car delivery, Amazon sends a series of notifications to let you know that the package is on its way. You can choose to change delivery locations or block access to the car in the Key app. If for some reason you need to run a quick errand or your car won't be available at that moment, Amazon will then default to your backup delivery location. So find your car. Amazon couriers have access to its GPS location, license plate number, as well as an image of the car. Amazon delivery employee demonstrated to The Verge how she would use her own device to verify she had found the car. Scan the package, request the vehicle to be unlocked from Chevy's connected car services, which Amazon says they never have access to any of that login details. That's all encrypted. And, yeah, it seems neat.
Yeah, this makes a lot more sense than the walking into my house type of thing. So,
yeah,
I don't know. And it's also, I think, a little bit more practical in terms of...
You know, especially as like I need to stop on the way home and get this thing. It's like, I'll order it and it'll be in the back of my car.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Be at work and they'll just drop in the back of my car. I'm good to go.
Yeah, I definitely feel better about this for like a sedan, not an SUV.
Yeah.
Like where the sedan, like you have like a actual just trunk. It's like a little bit separated from the rest of the car. As long as it's a big enough one.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Well, and then the other Amazon story we got, they've apparently got this secret project in the works, and nobody's exactly sure what it's going to be, but the rumor is that it's going to be a home robot.
And it's going to be an actual Alexa.
Yeah. Like a mobile Alexa that can walk around and follow you around the house to where you can't speak directly to an Echo speaker.
Yeah. So it's basically Detroit Become Human is slowly but surely becoming thing. Wonderful.
Yeah,
though I imagine this thing's going to look like a little toy robot.
Probably. For now.
So, yeah, the prototype robots reportedly have computer vision software and cameras for navigation. Planning to see devices in employees' homes by the end of the year. And that the general public might be able to test them out maybe as early as next year.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like it's not going to be like a robot butler.
Not just yet, anyway.
No.
But
it's going to be, you know.
I still give it 2 weeks before they figure out how to fuck one.
You know, you joke about it, but that's usually how this goes. Like,
that's what I'm saying.
Like, that's usually how these technologies manage to advance as fast as they can. That's the reason the VHS became like an affordable format for home video because of all the porno tapes people were buying and renting.
Yeah, well, the porn companies got behind it, and it's like, okay.
And that's why the internet took off like it did.
Yep.
Because, again, all the porn companies are like, all right, we'll do this.
Hmm. So, because you can get it all free.
Yeah. So, yeah, somebody's going to be like, okay, so how can I put my penis in this thing?
Yep.
They will find a way.
Yeah. On this episode of Will It Fit? All right. So many thanks to Brad Jones for that one. I totally ripped him off. So in other news that we now officially live in the future and that Japan will always and forever be Japan, Japanese engineers created a robot that can transform into a car.
Yep. That's the thing. That
Transformers are officially a real thing now.
Yep.
It takes about 30 seconds to shapeshift into a sports car. It can actually carry people inside.
Yes, it can actually be driven. Now, I wouldn't want... I'm not necessarily sure if I would like to be inside of it when it's transforming.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah, I don't think you can actually be in... well, you can actually... let's see, it stands over 12 feet tall, can carry 2 passengers in both its car and humanoid form.
Oh my god, so we do actually have pileable robots now.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be viable because it can walk at a speed of 0.06 miles per hour. Or run on it can run on its 4 wheels, but
yeah,
you're barely walking.
Yeah, but who cares? You're piloting a robot.
Yeah, it's like, just give it time, man. Yeah. They'll, this is the alpha stage. They got...
Next step is to figure out the way to get it to transform without having to have the would-be pilots poured into the casket from a bag.
Yeah. And then step 2 is to find out how to attach a rocket launcher to it.
Yeah.
And,
The developers say they will begin utilizing technology and entertainment capacity at parades and amusement park attractions.
Yeah. Well, I need to... That's pretty much finalized, and I need to go to Japan.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at the photos of this thing, it actually looks really cool.
Yeah, it does legit look amazing.
It definitely looks like anime.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's very much stylized.
Yeah, that's just fucking... That's just proof that, anime is real. Yeah. Or Japan is doing everything within its power to make anime real.
Yep.
I mean, fuck, Macross Plus predicted the idea of virtual idols like decades before we started getting Vocaloids. Yeah. And now they've actually got, having Hatsune Miku giving projection concerts, which is literally a thing that fucking happens in Macross Plus.
Yeah.
So moving on from that, so anybody who hasn't been paying attention to The Simpsons recently, there's been this new controversy that's come out over the character of Apu.
Yeah.
And so the voice actor for Apu, who is Hank Azaria, he's basically come out and he said, you guys, if you want me to step aside as the voice actor for the guy, I'm completely okay with it.
Yeah. He was on the Stephen Colbert Show.
Yeah.
He was talking about it. Let's see, I really want to see Indian, South Asian writers in the room, not in a token way, but genuinely informing whatever new direction this character might take, including how it is voiced or not voiced.
Yeah.
Definitely says he understands what this character has meant to people as well as the way it has been used to antagonize or harass Indian or South Asian people in this country.
Yeah. If you've noticed, Apu isn't brown anymore. He's yellow like the rest of the Simpsons cast. That didn't used to be the case. But also, he sort of became a stereotype.
Yeah.
Which, and it just sort of... Yeah, to be honest, we all can kind of have seen this coming.
Yeah.
After the way that, just in general, it's the times we're living in right now. People have started to sort of take another look at some of the stuff we've kind of realized we probably shouldn't have let go on as long as we have.
Yeah.
So, Apu is a character that definitely has potential to be much more than he is.
And he has definitely had some good episodes where he was able to be more of an actual person.
Yeah, but unfortunately for most of the show's history, he's basically been a punchline.
Yeah. Yeah, and I loved seeing the reaction to this on Twitter because the alt-right people that were like, oh, The Simpsons are awesome. Yeah, fuck you, people.
Yeah, bullshit. You fuckers were going on and on about how it was a bunch of liberal cuck propaganda. Yeah, fuck you.
And as soon as Hank Azaria was talking about this and the way he did, people were like, oh, they fucking bullied him. The SJWs got to him. It's like, no, he's a fucking reasonable person, and he has, you know, a bunch of different roles on this show.
And he has empathy, and he actually, you know, doesn't live in his mother's basement. He
actually listened to the people that were talking about this and learned from it and came out with an interesting new way of thinking about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, the people that you're like, oh, yeah, fuck PC culture or whatever, they weren't actually understanding anything that was going on with The Simpsons. Yeah.
Also, just shows you how fucking thickle they are, because it's the same shit that went down with Bill Nye. Yeah. Like, those fuckers liked Bill Nye back when he was wrecked, when he was, you know, dumping on creationists and stuff like he should have been. But then as, when he started talking about gender and how the preconceived notions we had of it are no longer true, they started, like a bunch of drooling, retarded rhesus monkeys, they started shrieking about SJW and just fuck those people, okay? That's fuck them. They don't have no goddamn integrity. You have no reason to take them seriously. That's the only reason we take them seriously is because they've actually gone out and killed people, and that's it. So fuck them.
That's why Kanye is their new favorite person, because he's acknowledged that.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, give it a month. Kanye's going to do something, and they're going to turn on him, too.
Yeah,
in case you haven't noticed, this is the entertainment block of the show.
Well, we have to, because it's a fucking... Unfortunately, that's the world we live in now.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when you live in a place where ignorance and stupidity is rewarded, you have to get tough on this shit at some point.
Yeah.
You have to be the adult in the room. And unfortunately, the adult in the room is sometimes the kids that have to be the adult in the room, because all the fucking adults are acting like fucking children.
And speaking of stupidity.
Oh, yeah. So, Charlie Rose, you remember him, right?
Mm-hmm.
He used to be on, what was it, NBC or ABC?
CBS.
CBS, yeah.
CBS's morning show.
Yeah, he was their host. He was an interviewer. Then it turned out that he was a real creep. He had a little button under his desk that would lock his office door.
No, that was Matt Lauer.
Oh, that was Matt Lauer. That's right. Different guy. Okay. But Charlie Rose is also a real creepy perv, too.
Which made a lot of sense, because a lot of John Oliver made fun of how real creepy he and the two women he co-hosted the show with.
Yeah, it's all right. Once you started seeing all that shit, it put it all in a whole new light.
It's like, oh, he probably does this off camera, too.
Yeah. And but guess what? Yeah.
Not in a nice way.
Yeah. And guess what? He's coming back with an all-new show. And you know what he's going to be doing on that show? He's going to be interviewing other quote-unquote victims of the Me Too movement.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that he's actually going to be doing this. I think it's like an industry rumor sort of thing.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I've heard somebody's been trying to see about getting some sort of deal in place for this. And
Yeah,
if you want to do something and alienate a huge bunch of people, it'd be a good idea for that.
I mean, I know, obviously, if you're like a moral, sensible human being, you would think, no, do not green light this. Fire anyone who even thinks of green lighting this, you know, from a canon. But we also know that when it comes to old media, crap is king. So,
I don't know. If I'm managing a small cable company, a small cable station that gets no views, and something like this turns up, I'm like, fuck it. You can air it here.
Yeah.
We
know, again, we know that
sensationalism sells.
Yeah. If there's
easy money,
yeah. If there's blood in the water, the sharks are going to come out for a drink. Mm. We know what's going to happen. So,
yeah, but it's also kind of tied to the notion of some of these guys. The name Charlie Rose, obviously, is like the host, as well as Louis C.K. and Matt Lauer's people that might potentially be in the mix for trying to get their comeback.
Yeah. Now, if anybody could actually do an effective comeback, it's probably Louis C.K.
Yeah.
But that's mostly due to his, you know, how talented he is as a comedian. Now he's probably going to have to do a really sort of public penance of some kind.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking like just straight, like he's going to have to rip his shirt off and start flagellating himself.
Yeah. Yeah, because that's been a fairly common thing with comedians, is they go and do something terrible and eventually they figure out a way to come back in some form.
Mm-hmm.
Though Dave Chappelle didn't do anything really that bad,
mm-hmm.
But he definitely took a long hiatus as he just kind of mentally broke down after the Chappelle show.
Mm. Yeah.
And now he's just back and doing his thing.
Yeah. But, yeah, so moving on from there, now we got the entertainment portion. Marvel is now saying that there is now potential for an actual Nova movie within the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
It's almost like there might be a lot of vacancies.
Yeah. No kidding.
I guess partly because he was originally going to be part of the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Mm. Yeah.
First movie.
Yeah, which he didn't end up... I mean, the Nova Corps themselves are in that movie, but actual Nova himself, the Nova character, was not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
John C. Reilly kind of stole his thunder, but... So... Nova and the Nova Corps is basically Marvel dead cribbing the Green Lantern Corps.
Basically.
Like, it's not even.
Yeah, it's the same thing. It really is.
It's like the same shit with Batman and Moon Knight. Hmm.
That's a fairly common thing with DC and Marvel. One would have a great idea for a hero, and the other one would conveniently come up with their own.
Yeah.
And you get weird stuff like there are two like Captain Marvels.
Yeah. The original Marvel. Captain Marvel is the one we call Shazam.
Yeah.
And then
that's
of course Cap
weird thing.
Oh yeah, that whole story is pretty much the reason why it's next to impossible to find old reprints of like old classic Captain Marvel stories.
Yeah.
From like the Golden Age, because a lot of people don't know this. When Captain Marvel was running regularly in the comics, he was actually outselling Superman, which is the reason why DC got into legal shit.
there's just also the weird stuff with the way Marvel has licensed out their things before they had Marvel Studios.
Yeah.
Because Fox technically also has the rights to Scarlet Witch, but Scarlet Witch is also in Marvel, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And they're kind of two distinct characters they can each do. But yeah, it's like, oh, this one's the X-Men version of Scarlet Witch, and this one's the Marvel version, I guess. So eventually that's all gonna merge together once they get the
and it's gonna be really awkward.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, they got a lot of vacancies. The X-Men.
Deadpool 3 is gonna be amazing because it's gonna be the only property that's actually aware of what's going on.
Yeah. Oh yeah. that's going to be a lot of fun. But, all right, so moving on from there, we now have actually gotten our first actual look at Venom with the new trailer. We got to actually see Venom, and he looks awesome.
Yeah,
real nice and gross looking.
Yeah, it's like, I don't want to see this guy in a dark alley. Thank you very much.
No, they actually did a good job of making him seem legitimately threatening.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which you gotta admit, sometimes that can be hard to do.
Yeah, some of the incarnations of Venom that have been out in the past didn't really look all that. Nah, they just kind of looked like weirder versions of Spider-Man.
Yeah. Like, people forget that this isn't supposed to be just a Spider-Man ripoff. It's a poor janitor dude who's been infested with an alien symbiote, you know? But, if you get a chance to look at it, holy shit, he looks legit nightmarish.
Yeah.
But
I'm still kind of wondering where this is going as far as the story is concerned.
Mm.
Like, I get the symbiotes come into play, and then this guy gets the one that is at least named Venom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He goes on a rampage, I guess, but to what end? Mm. Is there a technical villain in here?
Mm.
Does Spider-Man get involved? I don't think Spider-Man's going to be in it, but... Mm. Yeah, where does it go?
Yeah. What's really interesting about the whole comparing the Marvel Cinematic Universe and the DC Cinematic Universe is I think most people, like, if Marvel's going to do a side movie like this or Nova or whatever, the assumption is now that it's going to be pretty good.
Yeah.
Whereas when DC branches out and does this, it's the perception is, oh, God, don't fuck it up, please.
Yeah.
And that's,
well, I mean,
a lot of that is DC hasn't had, like, a single sort of person looking over it.
Yeah.
They kind of signed a rash of deals early on to have, what's his name, direct, like, most of these movies.
Zack Snyder, and that didn't work.
Yeah. And it's like, yeah, that's probably not the person to have in charge of all this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if he did, like, one set of movies there while others were doing things, like, yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't until you got, like, Patty Jenkins involved with Wonder Woman that it's like, okay, I can see where they can go and do some really cool stuff here.
Yep.
Yeah.
But they're still pretty early on this.
Part of why Marvel has succeeded is because they've been a bit more open about the type of directors they're willing to attach to their projects.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, DC, you know, they were pretty much all in on putting Zack Snyder at the helm, and it just didn't work.
Zack Snyder's a big name, you know.
Yeah. Whereas, you know,
saying, let's throw shit at the wall and see what sticks.
Yeah.
Whereas with Marvel, they've let people like, you know, Joss Whedon and, you know, James Gunn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they started off with like Joss Whedon. I forget who the other ones were, but they did the Hulk. They did Iron Man.
Yeah.
They put some good, not only good actors on that stuff, but also the good directors, and just had like a singular vision for this stuff.
Yeah.
And
how it fit together.
And it also shows just how, you know, how what their eye for talent was, because everybody remembers when Guardians of the Galaxy was first announced, and everyone was convinced that was going to be what was going to break the Marvel.
Everybody's like, who?
Yeah.
Who
the hell are these people? Who's this James Gunn guy?
Yeah.
Now, of course, if you're like an indie or B film guy, you know who James Gunn was.
Mm. Yeah.
Because he's been involved in indie film since the 80s. But then, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy came out, and it's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
He's a household name.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, so.
Yeah, I think DC will eventually get there.
Yeah, you got to give them time.
Yeah,
they got to. Unfortunately, they have to like crack some eggs first.
They have to recover from trying to hotshot the whole thing out of the gate.
Yeah.
They jumped into Justice League way the hell too soon.
Yeah.
You know, like they got a bunch of characters in that Justice League movie that didn't have, you know, like part of the reason the Avengers worked was because it was made up of a bunch of characters that had already had their own movies beforehand, pretty much. You know, except for two examples. But they had Iron Man, they had the Hulk, they had Captain America already with their own successful films. But as far as the DCU is concerned, we've had Man of Steel and the fucking, you know, Batman v Superman, and those both were
garbage.
Not good.
And then we had Wonder Woman, which was actually pretty good, but it didn't really help.
Yeah,
it didn't save it.
It was like, it was the thing that convinced people, like, oh, there is definitely something here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They just have to find the right people to helm this stuff and the right actors to portray these characters.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That, or they wrote it off as just a successful one-off that isn't reflective of the actual potential at hand.
Yeah.
Especially when they're still talking about, like, oh, here's the new Batman movie that's going to be standalone, not going to be part of the DC universe. It's like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah.
Make a Batman that's...
There is no reason for them to do that.
Yeah.
No.
You can have the Batman that's standalone and that they don't talk about Superman and all that, but still be part of the universe.
Yeah.
Like, have Batman on his own adventure because he's a loner. He likes to
honestly, I feel Marvel's fucking it up just by having their TV properties be genuinely separate from the MCU.
To an extent,
why not just tie it all together and make it completely epic?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there actually is a little bit some of that crossover happening. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. crossed over with the Avengers, the Netflix stuff. the fruits of that haven't delivered yet, but they're going somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's kind of where, weirdly, where DC does really well.
Yeah.
Their stuff with the Flash and the Legends of Tomorrow. Not so much the Green Arrow anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That has kind of gone off the rails, but they've done a really good job of crossing over with that stuff. And I feel like they kind of missed a huge opportunity. Just, hey, you've got a great Flash here that people really like.
Yeah.
Making the Flash in the movies.
Yeah.
Yep.
I know it's on a different scale and budget and all that, but you put some of those talent there, it's like, hey, this guy's really good.
Yeah.
He has a charisma and all that on his own.
Yeah. Well, now they have somebody at their head that can actually, you know, see this potential and, you know, make those decisions now. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here's what I'm going to say. If Marvel, when they do get the rights for Wolverine back and decide to make their own Wolverine movie, they need to get fucking Robert Rodriguez to direct it.
Yeah.
Because seriously, think about it. Like, think about all the stuff that's happened in Wolverine's story over the last 50 years.
Yeah.
You know, all the stuff that he went down when he started going to Japan, and he started going out into the jungle, and all that stuff, and think, don't, and tell me that that's not in Rodriguez's wheelhouse.
No, totally.
Yeah.
So, the interesting thing would be, like, who would be the new Wolverine that obviously isn't already in the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
Hmm. Oh, they could find someone, trust me.
It's just sort of like, God damn, there's so many fucking people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And like even the post-credit scene is like, oh yeah, there's still this person there.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, shit.
Yeah, well, anyway. All right, so moving on from there, the next Star Trek movie. It's rumored that the next Star Trek movie is actually going to have their first female director, S.J. Clarkson.
Hmm.
Yeah, she has primarily worked on Dexter, Bates Motel, Orange is the New Black, and Jessica Jones.
Yep.
She has some good work on her, though it's been primarily in TV.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is going to be Star Trek IV.
Mm.
So it'll be the continuation. The rumor here is that Chris Hemsworth is going to be in this. He was in the original as Chris Pine's father.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's going to... bring everybody else back and essentially have like a time travel plot where he and his father sort of meet up and do some shit. But also alongside this, Paramount is also working on another Star Trek film that J.J. Abrams and Quentin Tarantino are working on. And they are still in sort of the early phase of that, still working on the writing.
Okay, a Star Trek movie with J.J. Abrams and Quentin Tarantino. Oh boy, that's
J.J. Abrams. Yeah, J.J. Abrams did the first one.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's been around. I assume he probably still produces them.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
But yeah, Quentin Tarantino. I'm surprised he hasn't been on any of this, like, Marvel Cinematic Universe shit.
Yeah.
Oh, trust me, if they had given him the opportunity, he probably would have taken it.
Yeah.
And maybe comes into play when the X-Men become available.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, like, you know, nobody wants a real violent, gritty, dark Star Trek, but Discovery actually works.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Definitely potential there for that kind of
thing. Yeah. Game.
I'd like to see Tarantino on X-Force.
Ooh.
If Tarantino did X-Force, that thing would, like, never make it out of the fucking the MPAA. Like, it would be NC-17, and you'd have to get it, like, on Netflix or something, because...
And it would make all of the money.
Oh, it would.
Yeah. So.
And he would, like, legit get... like Rob Liefeld to executive produce the thing.
Yep. Yeah.
And it would just be, there would just be enough blood to paint the barn. Like,
yeah.
Enough blood to paint the barn and enough tits to feed all of the calves.
Just,
yeah.
Okay.
Seriously.
it's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is fucking Tarantino.
Yeah.
We know what his wheelhouse is.
Yep. And we like it.
Yeah, and he makes all the money with it.
Yeah.
So, All right, so moving on from there, Nickelodeon has announced that they are reviving something back from our childhoods, Double Dare. Oh. And they're going to have 40 episodes this summer.
Holy crap, that's going to be a lot of shooting.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, so the thing I didn't know is that that show started in 86.
Yep.
So I guess pretty much what I mostly watched as a kid was a lot of reruns.
Yep.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Constantly.
Yeah, a lot of people forget that up until like... okay, so a lot of people don't realize this, but when Nickelodeon first started out, it was basically a movie rerun channel.
Yeah, just ran short movies and stuff like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, and then it started like creating like original programming in the 80s.
Yeah.
Well, mid to late 80s, because they started out in like the... They actually first started, you know, broadcasting, I think, in like, what was it, like 1982 or something like that.
Something like that.
But, yeah, so that happened like right around the time, because like back then, Mark Summer had like two shows he hosted. It was Double Dare and what was the other one? What Would You Do? Do you remember that one?
Vaguely.
Yeah, it was the one where he would like... So the thing I remember about that was, unlike, you know, Double Dare, where they had, like, family teams and stuff, What Would You Do was a bit more like... like, format-wise, it was a bit closer to, like, something like The Price is Right, where
okay.
it was members of the audience that they would have come down and do stuff.
Yeah.
And it was usually, like... stuff like, you know, would you wear a costume, or do you have a hidden talent that you can do, or you know, let's see who here can do the closest impersonation of Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
Or who here, what contestant said looks like a certain celebrity, and which one is closest to being right. And if you did, if you lost, if you were like the big loser, they would take you over to this chair and then tie you to this chair, and there was, like, these arms that would sling cream pies at your face.
Yeah, because that's the thing.
Yeah. And, yes, people would get slimed on occasion, too.
Yeah.
Well, like all things of that era on that channel, everything's just a giant excuse to make a huge mess.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, that was the best part of Double Dare.
Mm. Yeah.
It was, like, especially the obstacle course at the end where it's, like, oh, you gotta pick the nose, get the flag out of there, and
yeah,
you know, dive into the, you know, the cream pool, the cream filled pool,
yeah,
all that sort of stuff. Slide down the slides or whatever that had
slide that had all like the goo or slime or whatever that they had covered in,
like leapfrogging to each different part of it.
Yeah, and just finding new ways.
Giant set of ears.
Yeah, the giant ears that you had to dig around in the wax to get something.
No, you had to go through them.
Yeah, you had to actually, like, climb through them and go out the other side. No, actually had to run through them because they were, like, I remember because they were, like, human-sized.
Yeah.
Or, like, a human to fit through. But, yeah, there was also, like, I distinctly remember the one where they had to climb through, like, sushi rolls.
Yeah.
And see, this was back in the 80s when, you know, sushi was still like a niche thing. And so, you know, it's like, have you heard of this thing called sushi? It's disgusting. It's made with raw fish. And now you can go and get sushi from a Kroger. But.
Yeah. But you probably don't want to.
No.
I wouldn't say that. The one we got here uses fresh fish. So.
Okay.
But,
yeah,
it's just
it's the gas stations you want to avoid.
Yeah, you don't want to get the sushi rolls at the 7-Eleven.
Yeah.
That's just eat at own risk.
Enjoy your botulism.
Yeah. Say goodbye to your bowels because you're going to be leaving them tonight.
Yep.
Yeah, don't buy the handmade food from the place where you wouldn't trust the people making it to.
Yeah,
yeah, basically.
Like, you wouldn't want to get gas mixed in with yours. Your food, yeah. So don't eat anything that isn't sealed.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so Mark Summers and basically both of those shows, the whole purpose was, what new ways can we find to cover these children in filth?
Yeah.
And the irony is he did not like filthy stuff.
The irony is he was super OCD.
Yeah.
Like, and then you realize, holy shit, he managed to put up with all of this.
Yeah. And so like Howie Mandel was also kind of the same way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't he end up on HGTV or something?
Who, Howie Mandel?
No.
Or Mark Summers?
Yeah.
He does that, and he also did stuff on the Food Network, too. And stuff on the History Channel. Yeah. He's still got work fairly regularly.
He's just a professional host of various things.
Yeah. But yeah, he still gets work pretty regularly. Yeah. So
is he, he coming back to host this? Or
no, they have not announced that yet.
Yeah, they don't know.
The details we have is just that 40 episodes for this summer. Revival will feature appearances from Blast from the Past, longtime Double Dare fans, and stars from today. And they're going to announce more details at a later date.
Yep.
They did a reunion special in 2016 on Nick at Night, commemorating the 30th anniversary. Mark Summers came back for that. I assume he's probably not that busy. That he can't come back for this sort of thing.
Yeah,
yeah, it's probable. But
I've heard
that his OCD, as we've heard here, then would he want to?
Well, see, the difference between him and like Howie Mandel is that he actually has managed to get it under control. Whereas Mandel's kind of spiraled out of control and he ended up shaving his head. So
yeah, that's true. I guess a big fat paycheck would also help.
That's also true.
Alleviate that.
Yep.
Yeah, you're willing to work on your issues if you're going to get paid for it.
Yep.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is also one of a few things that Nickelodeon is rebooting or reviving. Clarissa explains it all. They're trying to bring back with Melissa Joan Hart and the original creator on
Which
board.
Which is going to be weird because people don't know this. Melissa Joan Hart is like a huge Jesus freak now.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
They were trying to – she was trying to either kickstart or one of the – or Indiegogo or something like that on some new movie. I don't think it actually got funded.
Yeah.
But that makes sense because that's been a big thing on TV lately with like Full House, Roseanne, and a number of other shows coming back.
Yeah.
There's definitely a way to do that pretty well. I would assume she would be the mom. And her kids would be the featured ones. Let's see, Viacom is also trying to revive Blue's Clues. They got a 20-episode order out for with the new host.
I actually didn't know that went off the air.
Yeah, that went off a while ago. The original guy, they changed.
I know they changed the host and everything. I just didn't know it.
Steve, he is completely bald now.
Yeah.
He looks really weird. he's like bald and has a bunch of facial hair. It's like, that's not the guy that's was talking to the blue dog on the TV when I was a kid. Interesting stuff. Also, we're going to need Wild and Crazy Kids.
God, talk about another fucking blast from my past. That was like, back usually like around Saturdays, they would have like that whole lineup of game shows they would do.
Yeah.
Like it was that, they would have Double Dare, they would maybe have Legends of the Hidden Temple.
And what are the ones they have?
They also had, like, Figure It Out and,
yeah.
Which was hosted by Summer Sanders.
Yep. I'm trying to see what's been got a list of other stuff. What was the sports show they had?
Guts.
Yes, Guts. That would also be pretty neat. Yeah, let me see if I can find that. Because I think there were actual, like, noteworthy athletes that were on that show.
Yeah.
At some points.
Yeah, there were.
Let's see. Yeah, the Aggro Craig is what they were trying to win. They would just throw fucking rocks at people, even though it's styrofoam rocks, I assume.
Yeah.
That was just fucking hilarious.
Well, Guts basically grew up and became, you know, Ninja Mountain, so.
Yeah.
But, there was that. And then, of course, you had, like, the live-action Nickelodeon shows that would come on SNICK, you know, Saturday.
Yeah.
Like, Saturday night. So you had, like, all that, you know, was the big one.
On Nick Arcade.
Yeah, Nick. Oh, God, Nick Arcade, which.
That was the shit.
Yeah, that was the shit. And, goddamn, those kids could not play a fucking video game to save their lives.
Ugh. Jesus.
And the whole concept of, oh, you're going to be in the game.
No, and you're standing in front of a green screen and people are trying to point you. It's like, no, you need to put your hand here.
Yeah, Control is slightly worse than like a Kinect game on the Xbox 360.
Yeah,
somehow that's. It's like, oh, they're trying to like hit this thing. It's like it's not really working.
So it was ahead of its time in a really stupid way.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, like it was all fake then. So yeah. it was only as good as what they could do in like post. Yeah.
But the idea, I mean, the ideas were there, so I'll give them that.
Yeah.
They could do it now. So
I also did legit like the whole format where they had, you know, that one character who had to go over a screen of like a particular world or whatever, and had to avoid a certain bad guy.
One, like a Super Mario Brothers 3 kind of
kind of vibe. Yeah.
Yeah. That was pretty cool.
So, yeah.
I was trying to see if I could find a list of the games they had on there.
I know Sonic was on there. I know that, there was a lot of Sega stuff on there. Yeah. I remember that much.
Yeah, Sega was a sponsor, so that doesn't surprise me.
Okay, here I found it. Let's see. Gunneck, El Viento, King of the Monsters. Yeah, that was definitely on there. ActRaiser, Toki.
Yeah, I remember ActRaiser very specifically.
Robo Army, Sonic the Hedgehog, Sonic the Hedgehog 2.
It's pronounced Robotnik, by the way, not Robonik, you dumbass.
That was also early enough that the people that were doing the show probably had no fucking clue what these games were.
Nope.
Like, oh, I got to get it. Cool. Yeah. This game thing. I remember seeing some show that had to have been like the early 80s where it's just parents against kids, like adult versus kids, like doing game challenges.
Yep.
Like, oh, you have to get this score in the game sort of thing. And it's.
Yeah, Starcade. I remember that.
Yeah. Yep. That's what it was. It's like, this is really fucking weird.
Yeah.
Especially when it's like, oh, generic game show host.
I'm pretty sure it was, what's his name that was hosting it? Nick Arcade. It was, what's his name from Reading Rainbow?
Lamar?
Yeah, Lamar. It was him. Check it up. Look, I'm pretty sure I'm right.
Let me see.
Lamar Burton?
LeVar Burton.
Nick Arcade. Fillmore.
Oh, okay.
Nope.
The other
also the AKA the guy who gets mistaken for him all the time. Okay. I'm guessing
he was on Figure It Out. So I was a panelist.
Yeah.
Yep.
So other games: Parasol Stars, Battletoads, Joe and Mac, Pilots, Alpha Mission 2. Yeah, Super R Type, The Addams Family, Monster in My Pocket. I remember when that game was on there.
Oh, yeah.
Super Ghouls and Ghosts, yeah, that was on there.
Oh, God, yeah, I remember that one very I very specifically remember that one.
Yeah,
and did not know what they were unleashing.
Nope.
Yeah, it's like, oh, here, play this game you've maybe never played or you suck at. Like, hey, it's Paperboy 2. Figure out what you're doing. Oh, Chuck Rock, I remember that. Bonk's Revenge, Legend of the Mystical Ninja, Gradius 3, Super Adventure Island, Hyper Zone, Turrican, and there's a bunch of games.
A lot of good games.
Yeah. Weirdly obscure list of games, but not like, oh, we can get Mario. I guess there's no Nintendo on here.
Well, like we said, Sega was a sponsor, and I don't think they would have...
Sega, Neo Geo stuff, NES.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Remember, this was back in, like, what was it, the late 80s, early 90s? Nintendo was notoriously stingy with their IPs back then. Yep, if they didn't, everybody knows that Nintendo, like, sold out hard in the late 80s, but that was because they had, like, direct control over all of it.
Yeah.
So, you know, if they were going to have Nintendo sponsor it, Nintendo would basically have to take over the show. So,
how many episodes
do you
think
show
of
Video Power?
Huh?
It was another game show?
Yeah. But,
It was weird because they had this thing at the end of the show, like you could just run through this course full of game stuff, systems, games, accessories, whatever, and just whatever you could grab in such and such time you got to keep.
Yeah.
And they gave away so many Neo Geos like it was no big deal that it's amazing that the show lasted as long as it did.
And now we know why the Neo Geo tanked in the U.S.
Well, on top of being super duper
expensive. So
I'm pretty sure that when you were watching that show, Pat, you probably could tell who knew what the fuck they were on.
Yep.
Because they went straight for the Neo Geo.
Mm-hmm.
That was the only fucking way they were going to get one.
Yep. All right. Well,
I guess Psygnosis actually worked on some of the Face-Off games on Nick Arcade.
Mm-hmm.
Along with, I guess, a couple others.
Yeah, but so how many episodes of Nick Arcade were there?
84.
Hmm.
Two seasons.
Two seasons.
Well, moving on. Netflix. Netflix is now teaming up with DreamWorks Animation to make a Fast and Furious animated series.
Yep. It's going to feature Tony Toretto,
mm-hmm.
Dom's cousin, where he and his friends are recruited by a government agency to infiltrate an elite racing league, serving as a front for a nefarious crime organization bent on world domination. Yeah, that sounds like a Fast and Furious plot.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, they got a little shot of what this would look like, and it looks pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is just part of the deal that Netflix has with DreamWorks Animation for a number of shows and such. Because I think they've been working a lot of, like, Penguins of Madagascar sort of stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of sort of spinoffs. But yeah, this is in the works. When is it going to be out?
I think I saw 2019.
They say the next film is 2019. I don't think there's a date here.
It's just a thing that they're working on. And
yeah.
It truly happened.
Yeah. Hmm. All right, so last story of the night. HBO released the trailer for their series adaptation of the novel Sharp Objects. And you need to watch it. Especially, so I have not read the book yet. But I've been told that it is, well, because it has a lot to do with self-harm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those things that's, like, really captivating, but also, like, one of those things you desperately want to look away from because of how uncomfortable it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they got Amy Adams to be the main protagonist.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Camille Preaker, a journalist who returns to her hometown to cover the murders of two preteen girls, only find herself identifying with the young victims too closely. It's going to be an 8-episode limited series. Okay. So it seems it's going to be pretty short, but... let's see. The person who directed Big Little Lies is in charge of this show. And it's going to start in July.
That trailer looks great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Also looks like one of those things that it's like you watch it once and it will probably stay with you for the rest of your life.
Pretty much, yeah.
So.
But, all right, so I do believe we've got a show, folks.
That we do.
And a good show it was, so.
Indeed.
Man, well, as always, we would like to invite our listeners, if you've got a question you want to ask, a comment, have something you want us to read on the air, or just want to tell me about how I'm an SJ liberal commie cuck or something about all that stuff, you can contact us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got it linked on the show notes, and we welcome your scorn. Also, on top of iTunes, you can catch our little audio shenanigans at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, pretty much anywhere where unscripted lunary like ours is made and seasoned for your earmouths. Made and seasoned for your earmouths.
Just leaving that one right there.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's a cool thing I just said. So, for all that, I have been your host for the most, Brandon Perkins, and for Felipe Nolfo, Patrick Mifflin, and Chris Logie, good night, sleep tight, Korea is a country again tonight.